what's up, you guys? This is John. Welcome to Talk About That, the podcast where the banter train is leaving the station, boys. It's going to be a great episode. And we have a special guest today we're going to introduce in a few minutes, and it's going to be just awesome. But what's up, you guys? How you doing?
What's up?
I'm great.
Doing good.
Good. Your energy level's real high today.
Well, we're not sick anymore, so that's something.
True. Yeah, we're not sick.
It is true. This is like one of the, like day two of me feeling not abnormal.
Don't jinx it.
I wouldn't call it normal yet. I'm not abnormal.
Don't you jinx it. My wife, when she gets sick, I know I'm in for like a week of sickness when she coughs and it gives that seal bark.
Oh, my wife has the same thing.
So it's like, she'll, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Thing?
Yeah.
Does anyone
I do
cough?
The seal bark.
It's like, there's like a cough and there's like, honk! It's like a, what was that? It's like the devil's belching through you. And I'm like, well, that's 2 weeks. That's 2 weeks of my life.
Yeah, I do that. I do that bark.
Yeah.
Yeah. When
it's
you
not her fault, I will say that. She's
no, good save. she's home crying right now.
She cries like a seal, too. It's amazing. I just throw her a beach ball, and she plays for hours.
Dane, you kind of teased with some exciting news last week, and then you could not tell us what it was, but I hear that now you can.
Yeah. So we got a call from Tooth and Nail saying that Emery wants to take us back out on the road, which is really cool on its own merit, but another band is going to be on that tour. Mm-hmm. And it's a band that's been away for a long time.
Petra.
And if you, it's not Petra.
DeGarmo and Key. You said a long time.
It's a band called As Cities Burn.
Oh. Yeah. I know who that is.
And so they've been.
They're heavy, right? They're a heavy band.
They're pretty heavy, but they're also like kind of chill.
Oh.
They have moments. They're a roller coaster of emotion.
Right. I feel just like a city burning. Sometimes, sometimes it's a blaze. Sometimes
it's too soon for that. Yeah, California's on fire, John.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I wasn't.
You're not doing any California dates, are you, with that tour?
No, come on
out to As Cities Burn. We'll be in Santa Barbara if there is a Santa Barbara.
Jeez.
Hey, I'm glad I didn't make fun of it. Jeez,
I know.
Tony.
Good grief.
Yeah, so it's all southeast. So Atlanta and then all Florida dates. Orlando.
Yeah, I saw the dates and I was really excited for you.
Ybor City. Is that how you say it? Ybor?
It's Ybor.
Ybor. City. Ybor City.
Wasn't like Igor.
Wasn't, I was going to say, wasn't Ybor the guy with the hump?
He did. Walk this way.
Yeah, so we're pumped about that.
Yeah.
That's excited awesome, man. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're going south, too, in the middle of the winter. So that's
good. I'm not. I really love the cold.
Really?
I really, really love
the
cold.
Well, now you got the long hair, so. Long hair's hot in the summer, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of a pain.
You pull it back all summer, though, don't you? You got it sometimes. Down like a beautiful Jon Snow.
Well, I also work a landscaping job, too, and it gets in the way. So I have to, like, tie it up in a hat so it's not constantly in my face or, like.
Man.
You almost tie it up and make a hat out of it. It's so
really
long.
Good.
It was at one point. It's not anymore.
Crochet like a Davy Crockett kind of a thing. He's
got his own raccoon tail.
There was a guy one time, I remember, like, when the rap guys were doing that, like they would make these huge tall fades, you know, like all the rap dudes.
Like
and
flat
there was,
tops?
There was a rapper that cut his hair into a Davy Crockett hat.
Oh.
I gotta Google it because I remember it. He had it was like a coon skin looking on top, and then the back was like a little tail that he left himself. And
you have to show me that.
I don't know. I mean, again, maybe it's in my head. Maybe I pictured it in a dream I had. But
it's pretty incredible.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of dreams. I like to introduce our guest today.
Oh, that was a good segue. Johnny segue.
Because today is the girl of my dreams. Actually, my wife, Laura, is here today. She's joining us. How you doing?
Hey, I'm glad to know that it was me. You were
the girl of your dreams and your wife. There used to be a comedian. He would open that. It's one of the best, the funniest openers. It's kind of inappropriate, but he would say, guys, I work with him in a club. He'd be like, guys, I'm in love. And the whole crowd would clap. And they'd clap and he'd go, my wife is going to be so mad. It's so inappropriate, but it's funny.
So great.
It's a great misdirection.
Yeah, it's kind of like the old preacher joke, though. You know, my first wife, who is still my wife.
Oh,
know?
Right.
But she's my first wife today. She's still my wife.
And then if you ever do get divorced, it's like, he told us the whole time.
We knew.
We should have known.
We knew. Well, hey, babe, how you doing?
Good.
So you had an exciting day today.
Yes, I went on a field trip with third graders.
Oh, yeah. Laura took one for the parenting team today.
That sounds like a nightmare.
It was good. We went
to. Do you guys trade off on that stuff?
Well, sometimes I'm out of town for work. So, right. Yeah, we do kind of trade. I took today off to go.
Good. Where did you go?
The Traveler's Rest Plantation Home, which is a home by John Overton, who was apparently not a politician in the state, but a very, very wealthy man. He was the founder of the city of Memphis and owned something like 63,000 acres in this state at one point. Like a serious landowner.
How do you found a city? I don't understand.
I don't know either.
Well, but, you just say I found it?
We have we have Overton County. Yeah. So that's who that's named for in Tennessee is John Overton.
Right.
And
well, Overton High School is over there.
It's literally right next door to John Overton High School and Franklin Road Academy.
So you're telling me the guy who founded Memphis, even he didn't want to live there. He didn't get a house here.
Because it was for third graders, they really, there was probably a lot more to tell than they kind of just picked snippets.
Right.
But I always find it really interesting. They have like a replica schoolhouse. The kids got to write with quill pens today.
Okay.
They learned how to do the Virginia Reel, which is a dance.
You sent me a video. It was awesome.
They did like an old fashioned holiday drink, which was so nasty.
It was
called Celibus or Syllabub. And it was
celibate. It makes
no, it was not celibate, but it was milk, apple, cider, and sugar. And it was so gross. Oh, and nutmeg and cinnamon in
it. Was it heated?
It was cold.
That doesn't sound all that bad. But
milk?
I like all those things.
I don't know. It just,
I like a lot of things. You don't mix them together.
It was really gross, but Sadie loved it.
Did she really?
Yeah.
She liked the drink.
It's like, is she adventurous, though? You guys,
she is adventurous. She's become.
That's not an attack on her, John, to ask if she's adventurous.
Leave her alone.
But I mean,
she tries things.
No, she's not like the kid who's like, ooh, asparagus, let me try that. This. But she tried at the beach. She had.
She ate all seafood this year at the
beach. She had shrimp and lobster bisque. She tried smoked oysters. I mean, she will try a few things, but this was gross.
Yeah, she. We had not one chicken tender on the beach, which was crazy.
Yeah, no chicken tenders are fried.
Yeah, it's a big deal for a 9-year-old.
Yeah, but when they stop eating off the kids' menu, cha-ching, it was bad.
It's expensive. Yeah. Oysters I never ever want to try an oyster. It just looks like, Jim McGaffin calls it a snot rock, and that's what it is. It's
a snot rock. They're really, really good.
I don't love them raw, but char-grilled oysters Rockefeller.
It just tastes like fish, right? It just tastes like...
No, not at all.
They do like different flavors too. Like they add like barbecue, like a rub or... I don't know. It's different.
To make it not taste like a booger, you mean?
No, I like the taste. I grew up on Cajun cuisine, though.
Oh, good old etouffee.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Your mom makes gumbo. Some good stuff.
I like Cajun, but a lot of Cajun is just burned. Let's be real.
No.
She's like, it's Cajun. What? Really?
Where have you been eating Cajun?
Seriously.
But no, when they make something that's regular Cajun, like let's have the Cajun salmon or whatever. They
just
mean really blackened.
Yeah.
Oh. They put a little bit of pepper on it, and then they burn it, and they go, there you go. Break off some of that. That's a salmon
Literally.
Kit Kat. Yeah.
Oh, man. Hey, listen, big news for all the Vol fans.
Oh, yeah.
Happened over the great saga. In fact, there's a shirt that I've seen that said, I survived the Tennessee coaching surge of 2017.
Yeah. Okay.
So I'm thinking about getting one of those. But we have a coach. Coach Jeremy
Coach
Pruitt.
Taylor from Friday Night Live.
Yes. He is the same person.
Seriously. And I think it's when he gets fired up and it's that whole
thing.
Sounds exactly like Coach
Taylor. It
does. Taylor. And I was excited about it.
I was watching the presser and Emily was right there next to me and I said, he sounds like Coach Taylor.
Thank you.
Like exactly.
Yes.
Like him.
John didn't hear it, but
well,
I totally do.
Obviously, Coach Taylor doesn't have all the eyes. It's a tick.
No, he does.
But he does do the eye.
He does that.
He does that.
Does he?
Yes. Absolutely.
Coach
does.
Taylor's a little more Texas and a little less Alabama.
What are the chances?
Yeah.
What are the chances
that
he picked it up from watching Friday Night Lights?
I wonder too.
Wow. I don't know, but you know, he was on
a show.
Well,
this is how coaches talk.
It's life.
He was on an
art.
MTV reality show.
Okay.
Yeah, I saw that.
It was called Two-A-Days.
Oh,
and it from the high school that he was at, because it was like one of those powerhouse high schools, and that's back when, you know, they were doing reality TV out of everything. So, yeah.
Well, you know, Fulmer was on Friday Night Lights.
Yep.
Fulmer
was
he?
I knew he was on The Blind Side on the movie.
Actually, that might
be. Yeah, I don't think he was on Friday Night Lights.
Yeah.
But he was definitely on The
it.
Blind Side.
I'll get back.
Actually, it was The Biggest Loser. What? That's not fair.
No.
Come on.
Manatee back in the house.
Johnny.
Gosh. Manatee. Well, they, okay, here's the
okay. Here we go. Johnny's got to explain
that joke because it just sounds like weird.
Guys, you know you're preventing Philip Fulmer from ever being a guest on this show.
They
right
used
now.
To do these signs where they would be like intensity, and it would be like the power big power tea, yeah. orange tea in the billboards, and it would just show the guy with the headset on pointing. And then I was like, we need to do one with Fulmer and just be like, manatee, and have the tea on the...
It's so awful, Johnny.
My favorite was when he would be like, they would be doing two-a-days, and they'd show the press conference of him doing that or whatever. They'd show footage, and he'd be clever. I'm like, go! And he's dogging these guys to run faster. I'm like, dude, you look like you're just holding a sandwich in one hand. I don't know. There's just something about a big football coach.
Well, he's an offensive lineman. Yeah, lineman.
There's different shapes of people. I'm a big dude.
You're saying Fulmer was on?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He was on a championship team, right? In the 50s. Did he win a championship?
Well, there's a contested championship in, what, like 67 that we claim. Because there was no BCS.
Oh, right.
So multiple people.
Claimed the
AP and the coaches and the whatever.
Yeah. So, but
was there even an AP back then?
I don't know, Johnny. It was a different. They weren't even using a football, I think.
Yeah, it was just like a pig skull,
a rock or something. Pig skull.
Evan, the other day, he heard this saying. Somebody on TV said, "You got to hum that tater."
No, I told him that.
Is that what you?
Yeah, I told him that because there used to be a guy that would call in Knoxville radio, and isn't that oddly enough, he was a Titans fan. They called him Titans Bill. It's mostly Vol fans that call in Knoxville radio, and they're insane. They're insane. Jimmy, what they need to do? And they'd give a play.
Yeah, absolutely.
If they listened to me, they'd win, by God. But no, so this guy would call in. I'm like, this is before the Titans were a big deal. And in Knoxville, they're really not a big deal at all. Now they may be. But when I lived there 10 years ago, 11 years ago, so this guy called Titans Bill here. He's a northerner. Bill, let me tell you what they need to do. They're going east and west. They need to get down the field. They got to hum that tater, Jimmy.
Oh, dear.
I was like, what? What is he saying? Is that a saying?
Where you hum that tater, Bob.
You don't get anywhere going east
and west.
Incredible.
Wow.
Yeah, that's
Titans Bob. Well, anywho, the Laura, I got to tell you this. So many reasons I love my wife, but she's such a like huge football fan. And so like I come home the other day and where was I? I was doing a premarital counseling or something somewhere. I forget what I was doing, but I came home and she had the press conference, Pruitt's press conference up. And then after she'd already listened to the whole thing, we sat in the bed and we had to listen to it again to make sure I could listen to it. We could experience it together like a family. This is love.
It's a big moment. Yeah, it's a big moment.
Great.
Absolutely. It's a big moment. I mean, so there's a rumor. And so Laura hasn't heard about this. So
not to be confused with a groomer. That's
no. Not a groomer.
Those are dead.
You know, he came out, by the way, and said, I can't control all of the stories. I read some things.
He probably
just extended his ESPN contract. By 10 years.
Everybody used Tennessee to get more money with their job that they currently
have. Even I used it somehow.
Yeah,
it was
absolutely.
Weird, so.
Extended his ESPN contract and his narcissistic personality
disorder. He's fine. I like Gruden.
Oh, I don't dislike him.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad. I don't know. I mean, we all want
to. We don't know that he would have been
a
college coach.
What haven't I heard yet, though?
So apparently Jeremy Pruitt took the famous Tennessee trash can.
Oh, Lord.
Okay. You can't call
infamous.
It famous. They did it for a year.
Infamous trash can all over ESPN.
The stupid trash can.
It's stupid is
Which,
right.
By the way, my niece the other night at my nephew's wedding, another niece, we're sitting there, and apparently she says she messes up common colloquialisms a lot and everything. And so we're sitting there and she goes, guys, I'm not even kidding. At school, I'm such a joking stock. And I said, you mean laughing stock? And she just,
that's not good.
So funny.
Yeah.
Joking stock.
Anywho, we were the laughing stock of the nation with that trash can. So I guess Coach Pruitt took the team and took the trash can.
This is all alleged.
And then also brought a dumpster over, dumped everything from the trash can to all of their old stuff into the dumpster.
I'm talking about like the roster sheets. He said, there's no roster spot that's guaranteed to any of you.
Well, I think that's good.
And he tore it up. Yeah.
And he set the dumpster on fire.
So it's a literal dumpster fire.
And then he looked at the players and said, y'all see that? That's what your program has become.
Oh, wow.
And then he made him get like Home Depot 5-gallon buckets
filled with water
and like ferry water and said, now y'all are going to do today what you're about to do for your program. We're going to put out this dumpster fire. I'm going to tell you guys.
After that, did they go to like youth camp and throw their CDs in?
That's exactly what I thought.
The fire.
It's very youth pastor-y.
The campfire fornication, right? When you had to burn your secular music.
Remember, I used to do those Overdrive retreats. We had the leadership team was called Overdrive, which was always like these, because my last name's Driver. And so, and our youth group is called Shift 122. So it was all these groomers about me that I had made this all about my last name, which is not true at all. And I'd like to right now say that that wasn't true. I've been waiting years to make that disclaimer. But I used to come up with something every Overdrive retreat to try to. That you need that moment.
It's like a totem. It's a
youth pastor thing, you know. So like I remember that one time. I'd run out of times. You could bury something, or you could set something on fire. And so what I did a burial at sea that time. I made them all take rocks. And we walked out to the pond, and they tied like a piece of paper with something on it to it, and we threw it into the pond. Wow. So right now there's all these. Nice. There's nothing under there but rocks.
Where was this at?
This was here,
Overdrive.
Dane.
This was here.
Dane, you were here.
I don't think I was there.
No, usually in summer Overdrive retreats because Dane was at camp.
Right, I was at
he
camp.
Was not there. But I actually told a Dane story today because they got on the bus and did the whole, you know, person number one person number here, too.
I remember this
story.
So
I looked over at this mom that was with me. I was like, we had this kid on this trip.
I was
like,
that
hid from us on the bus and texted us 20 minutes later after we had stopped
like an hour later.
At a Stuckey's in rural Alabama. And he's like, where are you guys?
You left me.
You left me. I wanted to kill him.
Out.
My blood pressure went through the roof.
I knew exactly how to freak you guys out.
Listen, you can't do that to somebody who's had a stroke. It's not nice.
It was good.
But that totem is like, it's important. Like, youth pastors have to do, object lessons are big with kids, and I get why they do it. But yeah, you run out of ideas. I remember, this is a weird memory, but it's burned in my brain because my mom, she ran a group home. And so we'd have these guys, sometimes they were like 19, 20-year-old kids that would come live with us, you know, and they had different things. Sometimes they had drug problems. Sometimes they had mental illness. Sometimes they had both. And she was so big on like secular music. You can't have this kind of music. Nothing was like heavy metal or whatever. But some of these guys would have like Playboys and stuff. And we had like an incinerator on our property, like where you could have burn. You could burn
things.
And she burned this guy's penthouse and Playboys one day. And I was standing outside. I was like, a kid. I was like, what is she? Oh, she's burning this guy's. And the ash floated up. And like, so I'll never forget like half a naked woman floating by me.
It's raining naked ladies.
I was going to say, instead of the song, it's raining men, it's opposite, raining naked
like
ladies.
Like the opposite of her intent was happening.
That
like,
really
nobody's going to see this ash floating up.
It spreads
to
the whole neighborhood.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Some kid down the street.
Right. Like,
it's a Christmas miracle. Oh, my goodness.
Anyway.
Well, so I am excited, though. So it's an Alabama defensive coordinator, which there are questions about whether or not, because he's never head coached. In fact, in 2004, he was literally teaching kindergarten PE.
Yeah. This sounds like John Kerry.
It is. It's
it
just
does.
Like John
this
Kerry.
Is his rise. This is going to happen.
I'm telling
this
you
is
guys,
his pathway.
He's going to coach
so you're
Alabama.
You're saying, in 10 years, John Kerry will be the UT head coach. After Pruitt
maybe.
Is his own dumpster fire.
No.
He's like, I don't know what happened. It didn't work out.
I'll speak against that.
John Kerry comes in.
It was like Pruitt was right here.
Yeah.
But I loved how he handled that in the press conference, saying, you know, nobody's a head coach until somebody gives you that opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody's in anything until you get that first whatever opportunity. So I just thought he handled it really, really well.
Laura, would you go as far as say that you think that he knows himself well?
Oh, gosh.
I don't know.
That's what we call.
I bet Jeremy Pruitt doesn't care about any agreement.
That wasn't even a soft segue.
Terrible segue.
That was horrible.
I do want to take this moment before we get into any of that, because Dane's dreading it so badly for some reason.
I'm ready.
But he's like, bring it. I do want to give Laura the opportunity because she is a faithful listener to talk about that podcast. Which, where can we find that podcast, Dane?
At Talk AB.
That pod.
That's it.
And so every week, because, you know, I do make a lot of mistakes, and she always either tells me a way, like, oh, y'all could have talked about this, and she reminds me of things. And there's a lot of things I've screwed up, though.
Oh, no.
A lot of things I've not said right. And so is there anything, and I should have probably cued you for this, but you do have one of those great memories. Is there anything you want to from the past? What episode is this?
12.
This is 12.
Episode 12.
This is a dozen. So is there anything from the past 12 episodes, like commentary you want to give or things that we should have done differently, something that should have been corrected? So this is your opportunity.
We already know how much it sucks, so you can skip over that portion.
No, it does. I love listening. But, you know, obviously I've been married to John for a really long time, and I've known you guys for a really long time, so I just love it because it always feels like I'm listening to a conversation around my dinner table or, you know, at a restaurant or whatever. So I really like it. I did tell John, though, I loved last week that he was the only one who talked about how tight Mariah Carey's dress was. Oh. I said, so instead of anything else, let's talk about that. Because
Well, he was positing a theory that perhaps that's what was holding her up.
Yeah, but that's not even
well, you know, she wears those tight dresses.
Well, that doesn't make any
but that's
sense.
Not really even the point. What he was talking about was the fact that she was...
He noticed it
exactly.
First.
Whoa, guys, I didn't notice anything. Uh-huh. You sent me the photo or whatever, Johnny. You set it on fire, if I remember correctly.
Right. Floated. She floated above.
Floated into the... No, that was the exact point. Like, that there was maybe a stretch factor, you know, a tension, if you will. Now there's
the
a tension
I think the only tension was with you.
Yeah, John was giving it a lot of attention. So, so what you're saying, John, is you said to Laura, all I want for Christmas is you to wear a dress like that. Is that what is that
I tell you right now, that's not happening.
Speaking of Mariah Carey, so I took Sadie to see the Star movie last night. And has anybody else seen it but me?
I know about it. I know about it. It's the animal's perspective on the nativity.
Right. Yeah, it's talking animals. It's just like the Bible, except
talking animals.
Well, no, there's well, there was a talking donkey, and a donkey is the main character.
Curry wants to see a movie with all the talking animals from the Bible, like Balaam. She had others. I can't remember what else she said. She's like...
I think that's the only one.
No, there was...
Well, there's the snake in the garden.
Well, yeah, you wouldn't involve him.
Though. Satan talking to Balaam's donkey.
Oh, man, what a script. We're gonna go ahead and put a spec script together and see if we can get it sold, but I don't know.
I'll buy it for 2 cents.
Well, there was, though, Mariah Carey. So the,
she's one of the voices.
Yeah, Mariah Carey, Kelly Clarkson, Kristen Chenoweth.
Yeah.
You had, and it's a musical, right?
No,
there's songs throughout.
Okay.
There's songs throughout. Great, great soundtrack. Zachary Levi is the voice of Joseph. You had
Oprah's in it, right?
Oprah, I think, was in it. Yeah.
You thought it was Oprah, and I think we need to confirm that.
No, Oprah's definitely in it.
There's no way to know.
Well, you said, I think Oprah, and I was just like, or do you just think all black women sound alike?
Whoa. You brought that.
Let's confirm it.
I'm not talking. I do. Hey, you're going to eat those words, buddy. Here we go. Right now.
Last night at my show, they gave a car away. Speaking of which, they gave a car to this guy who he's one of their youth leaders, I think, or involved in their youth ministry. And he takes Uber to church.
Oh. She plays Deborah.
And
they gave him a car.
They gave this guy a car. And I wanted so bad, because I came up after, I wanted so bad to be like, and you get a car. Everybody in here! But I didn't.
Why? Why did you not?
Because I didn't want to like pee on the moment, because it was a really cool moment. So I don't want to be like that.
That's exactly why you should have done it.
Yeah. She, by the way, does play a character in the movie, and I would like an apology. Not just to me.
I apologize to you and to Oprah.
All the listeners.
Every listener, I apologize. Yeah. For John's latent racism.
let me see, who else is in it?
Tracy Morgan,
yes. Mm-hmm. It was funny. It was really good.
I need to see it, because I've heard good things, too.
It was. I enjoyed it. Sadie and I went, and that's why we skipped your show last night. So she wasn't feeling real well, so we wouldn't.
I skipped your show because I don't like you.
Oh. Well, I just thought, the only reason I mentioned it is because, I mean, you've come to my shows before, but the band that was there, this girl group, I was like, oh, they're called Cimarelli. And I was like, oh, whatever, Cimarelli. That's what Curry said. And I was like, I'm sure they've never heard that.
Right.
Please make sure you say that. Good grief. I can't take her anywhere. But anyway, she was like, well, who are they? And so I looked them up, and I was like, well, maybe it's local. Maybe they're local. They're from Sacramento. So no.
Not local.
Secondly, 2.5 million fans on Facebook.
That's nuts.
4 million subscribers on YouTube. Over 1 billion hits on their videos.
Oh, jeez.
It's like, what in the world? They won a Teen Choice Award. I'm like, wow. I got to follow these girls? Sure enough, they blew the doors off. They're unbelievable.
So yeah, like, but don't they sing like a bunch of like All About Boys? And
they kind of do, but they did Christmas songs last night. So they did like Carol of the Bells. It's like 6-part harmonies in Carol of the Bells.
Yeah.
It was like pitch perfect. Cool. It was unbelievable.
Because John found them on YouTube or something.
Yeah,
listened to some of the songs. I'm like, not sure my now they have a thing, going to that.
Yeah, they have a thing like
I'm afraid to say he's going to come back with a boyfriend.
Yeah.
which is not going to happen.
Get ready.
No.
Y'all, he's in denial.
Get
straight
ready.
Up.
Guys, she's nine.
Right.
I mean, but she's not going to
stay
nine.
I had a girlfriend when I was nine.
Is she interested in boys now?
Oh, interested.
Boy crazy.
Well, I don't know, Laura. How would you... She
it's
has
like
her
everything
moments.
Else when you're nine. She likes something for 3 seconds, and we spend a lot of money on it, and then she likes something
else. You
bought
her a boy, is that
oh,
what
no.
you're saying?
No.
Oh,
okay.
This is a true story. There was a particular boy at school she mm-hmm. was interested in for about 3-4 weeks. I was hearing about him every day when she came home. And then one day she got in the car and told me she didn't like him anymore. And you want to know the reason why?
Why?
He started eating his boogers. So this is
classic.
I said, honey, that's probably a good reason not to. Maybe y'all should just be friends, you know?
So my friend
and make sure you wash your hands.
So my friend Marty Simpson, it was either his daughter or his son came home one day from school and they were like 8 or 9 and said, yeah, this kid in my class picks his nose and eats it. Marty's like, that is gross. He's like, yeah, they're Mormon.
No, what? He tied it together.
What a funny,
wow,
weird stereotype to start. Well, you know, those Mormons, they pick their nose and eat it.
That doesn't even make
what
sense.
A weird thing to have to correct. In
did he
child.
Correct it?
I don't know. Who knows? If you're out there and you're Mormon and you're listening, I apologize. Blight on your culture.
Oh, my goodness. So, you know, it was my wife that Dane that introduced me to so many things, who's enriched my life in so many ways. And she's going to be a perennial guest on the show. So, but she's
did you
all,
finally figure out how to spell Enneagram?
Oh, he butchered it last week.
Well, I tried to tell everybody. I was not ready.
Is it I-N-N?
It's
E-N-N-E-A-G-R-A-M.
I haven't educated myself to all of this, but my wife is brilliant. And so... The truth is, here's what's hilarious. Why don't we tell the story of how I reacted to the idea of Enneagram? It was bad.
It was so bad.
You didn't think it was...
John's just resistant to that kind of stuff.
Same.
Because,
same.
You know, you're not going to put me in a box. You're not
Nobody
gonna,
puts baby in a corner.
You're not going to tell me that this is this, and you're not going to tell me this is that. And, you know, just because it's my personality type doesn't mean that I have to do X, Y, and Z. And
right.
Just super, super
I think you're
resistant.
Afraid, like, yeah, if it comes out like, oh, it turns out you're a socialist, you're like, oh, no.
Well, I do. Well, I mean, even like... What was it last year that Laura, she was reading up on extroverts and introverts?
Oh, that's been a couple years ago, but yeah.
Yeah, and she told me I was an introvert. And I have this,
yeah.
like, very...
If he thinks the word or the attribute has a more negative
yeah.
connotation than a positive one, he's going to really kind of rebel against the... thought of being that, because to him it's got a negative connotation, and so
she
no I am
peg,
I am not that.
She does. I think Laura's your Enneagram. She is.
Well, no, I do. And part of that is the journey of realizing my insecurities, you know, and being okay with saying I have
well,
them.
It's, but it's okay to be an introvert now too, because it's like I see it on Facebook all the time. There's like t-shirts. I'm an introvert. I don't even want to be here. I'm sorry I was late. I didn't want to come. Like, introverts are buying. And I'm like, if you're wearing that shirt, you're officially not an introvert. Like, you want attention. I don't get it.
Well,
I don't buy that.
Well, but the whole introvert-extrovert thing really doesn't have much to do with your outward. Like, people generally go, oh, you're introverted. That means you're shy.
Yeah.
Really and truly kind of at the core of introvert-extrovert is how you – recharge, like
yeah.
where you get your energies from. And so there are a lot of people that are very charismatic individuals that are in positions of leadership, people on the stage that are truly introverts.
Right.
When the event is over, when the thing is over, they want nothing more than like to get back to their hotel room and just unplug a little bit, because they recharge and get energy from sort of being alone and kind of in with their thoughts and those sort of things. There's not anything about me that's even remotely introverted. If I feel crummy, like if I'm just low or blue. Like, nothing sounds better to me than like going to a crowded mall or like through, like, let's, if we're like exhausted, I'm like, let's have 20 people over. And he's like, have you lost your mind? But I get my energy from other people.
Yeah, we'll have big, and that was the thing.
I'm like a leech, basically.
I would say actually all three of us, I would peg as introverts. Because here's the problem, though. I took offense to the label introvert because I'm a public speaker.
Yeah,
you know, and I'm a leader. I want to be a leader. I want to be a better leader. And there's this idea to me, and it's just really the stereotype of it.
Introvert means wallflower.
Introvert means so shy, afraid of your own shadow.
Right.
And she really helped me work through understanding that whole how the whole recharge thing. Because truth is, for me, if I'm tired or I'm not even just tired, I need John alone time. Mm-hmm. I want to be out running alone.
Yeah.
I take like an hour long shower in the dark.
Yes.
Like a hot shower in the dark, sitting in the
That's
floor.
Like serial killer stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And I make lists.
And it's just very and so that I thought I was past that. And then she pulls out this Enneagram thing.
Yeah.
And you know, basically tells me, so I'm a six. Okay. Well, I just hated the test. I didn't even want to take the test. And so, and I'm a little bit like you, Dane. You know, last week you said a lot of things, Dane.
Hurtful things.
But one of the things you said that I think is something true for a lot of us. You said, hey, I already know this about myself. So why would I, you know, want to know? And I pride myself on, I don't realize that, but like it drives Laura crazy. I'm kind of a self-help guy over the years. I'm actually coming off of that a little bit, but I'm not the kind of guy that lives to accentuate what I'm good at. I'm the guy that lives to make up for my faults. Like I put so much energy in trying to shore up what's wrong with me. Instead of just focusing on the things I do well, which is a horrible, like John Maxwell, all of them. That's a horrible way to live. And I know that. I know all of that. But I want to. So I end up trying to be good at everything or minimize the things about me that I think make me not qualified or make me not proficient at something.
Yeah.
And so because of that, I feel like I'm very in touch with who I am.
Right.
And I've read a lot of books about this. Right. You know, Laura and I laugh. A lot of husbands don't want to talk about their feelings or what they're going through. Like, that's all I talk about.
Yeah.
I think you and Johnny are the women in your relationship.
To me, it's the only thing worth talking about.
Yeah.
You know? It's like when I see people who, like, for instance, like spirituality, like people who are agnostic, but they're not deep thinkers about it. They're just like, well, there's no way to really prove. And it's just, I don't even think about it anymore. I was raised in church, but it's whatever. I just grew out of it. And I'm like, it's literally the only question worth spending time on.
Yeah.
Where did we come from? What is our purpose? Is there a God? And if you're telling me that it's not settled in your mind, but you're just okay with it not being settled, I can't live with that. I can almost live with somebody being an atheist because they were burned by whatever and they were more than I can just be like, I just don't. So in the same way, like what else is there except feelings and where are we going and what are we still connecting? And to me, that's just 101. But I agree that at some point you have to just get into the business of like, we just got to be married and have trust in each other and have faith that things are okay.
Right.
But I pick at the scab for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and she's really good about, you know, like there's a lot of things I don't say that I'm thinking. Like I've learned to just, okay, I will bombard people in my life and it gets real narcissistic real fast because now everything's about me and everything's about what I'm feeling. And so that I try to back up and think about others, but she's also really, there's just times I'll go, hey, listen, I'm just going to need about an hour of your time. I just need to talk this
you
out.
You say that? You say, I need an hour
like,
from you?
I need to go through the John process.
It's kinda weird. I've never done that. It just ends up being an hour.
Well, yeah. I know where it's going, so I might as well go ahead and just have realistic expectations for all of us.
Yeah.
You know, this is going to be what it is. And she's great about that. Oh, yeah, well, let's talk about it. And so the Enneagram thing, though, the test bugged the snot out of me because I hate it when it says, and I think I said this a little bit last week, things like, are you
this or this?
Right. Are you ever insecure, you know, cautious? And it goes through these lists of things that I don't want to be. but I know I certainly am.
Yeah.
So then I go, well, yeah. And then the next question is something like, are you forthright and outspoken and bold and courageous when everyone else is not sometimes? And I'm like, well, yeah. I mean, because I'm also the guy.
Yeah.
If you get me going at the table and there's just a moment, I'm like, let's do this, you guys. And those two things to me about myself can't coexist. Like, okay, these things can't be right. This test is stupid, you know. And I finally just was like, well, you know what? You know, forget this. I'm just going to answer them all as I should. And then coming to the end of that, realizing, well, that's actually a thing. So the number I am, that's actually a thing. That, yeah. That
a thing you already knew.
No.
Doesn't
but,
matter.
Well,
but you look at the layers more. So.
But I didn't know why.
Yeah.
So yes, I may have known those things about me, but I didn't. That's really what Enneagram
just
is about.
Why? What do you mean why?
But hold on a second. So there's this accepted thing in psychology, a school of thought. Do you ever take psychology like in high school or college?
Yeah, I took one class.
Okay. Do you remember something called the Johari window?
No.
Okay. Mm. So it's
an Indian film.
It's basically, you know how a window has multiple panes in it? So it's basically a diagram where things are divided. And it says there are things about you that are known to yourself and things that are unknown. So there's a known and an unknown quadrant. Then there are things that are known to you, unknown to others, things that are unknown to you but are known to others. So things that people know about you that you may not know about yourself.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
And then there's the lower quadrant, which is basically the unknown on either side that's a path to, you know, kind of growth. So while I think that, yes, with the Enneagram, which is kind of a motivations test, or, you know, Myers-Briggs or any of those things, they are things that you know to some extent. But I think there's a lot about each of us that we either don't know or we really don't want to go there.
Yeah.
And I'm like really just, I'm like into lay it all bare. I think it's because I turned 40 or something. Like, I'm just looking at the past decades and I go, oh man, if I had known this about myself, then maybe I could have avoided that. Right. And if I had known this, then maybe I could have avoided that. Or maybe I would be doing because of that.
What good does that do you?
What good?
You can't change the past.
Absolutely not. And wouldn't want to, because I learned and grew from those things. But moving forward, the decade between 40 and 50, if I'm more self-aware about maybe my own motivations, makes me a better friend, makes me a better spouse, makes me a better mother. So I want to know more and reveal more about myself. Number one, so that I think it's the same reason David prayed, like, search my heart, oh God. He wasn't really saying, like, God, come look in my heart, because he didn't think God already knew. I think he was saying, like, reveal, like, get in there and go to the places that I don't really want to go, because it had benefit for him. And I think it has benefit for all of us. I want to avoid the pitfalls in this next decade. And maybe if I'm avoiding the bad stuff, then it's more opportunities for growth in things that I didn't do well before. So I don't know. That's just kind of where I'm at. But it's probably just an age thing, because I'm getting old.
I like that. And to me, it was comedy. Comedy is all about, when you start writing jokes, you figure out how you feel about things without meaning to.
Oh, sure.
Let's start writing about, let's take gun control. You know, I grew up having a certain idea about guns, but after you write 10 jokes, you're just like, oh, wow. It reveals a layer to you that you're not. And the other thing is, when I started out, a lot of my jokes were like very, this is what I hate about the world. That's how comedy starts. Like, this is what I'm irritated by. And then as I've gotten on, I had friends who would tell me, like, bluntly tell me, it's like you said, the things that people can see about you that you can't see about yourself. Mm-hmm. Well, other comedians will tell you about your show. This is what your show is, in case you were wondering.
Yeah.
And I had a friend who is a good comic, and he's one of my best friends in the world, but he said, your show is amazing. And I'm afraid that people are leaving your show amazed, and they leave my show, and they know me. Wow. And my show's not as good as your show, but they know me after an hour.
Right.
They don't know you. They just know, man, he could sing and he could play the guitar. And I started knowing that now I can walk forward and I go, I started revealing things about myself. The embarrassing moments that I thought I would never want to show anybody. That's the thing. I blare through a loudspeaker now.
Right.
And so now I'm connecting. So there is something to that. One thing I realized, for instance, is I had a lot of I wanted to be clever on stage. Mm-hmm. The first 2-3 years, it was all about, like,
show
I just want people to see
are,
how smart I was. And I realized about 3 years in, nobody ever told me. I just said, I think I did a couple of radio interviews and they were like, where'd you go to school? And I was like, well, I didn't go to college. And then I started realizing this is why I need that on stage. I want to say to these people, I'm as good as you.
Yeah.
And so it did help me to know those things because I go, it's informing my voice on stage. And as a person, I go, this is my hang up and it has a destructive potential.
Right.
And I can get through it if I just know this. So I don't know.
Well, and that's the thing I love, at least in my very limited experience of just kind of trying to discover the Enneagram and gaining some insight from it, is that nothing in it is either inherently good or inherently bad. There are things in all of us that are great things about us, and there are things that are not so great about us. And it's how to kind of keep the scale tipped in the right direction so that the things that are good and positive about your behaviors and your motivations particularly are the things that are the driving force for you, not the negative behaviors. And really and truly, even before I took the test, reading the descriptors of the negative parts of my particular type, that's how I knew that's what I was. Now, I took a couple of tests to kind of, you know, play out what my gut was telling me. But that's how I knew, is because the really negative parts – I would never admit them probably verbally to anybody, but reading them, you go, oh, yeah, that's me.
Yeah. No, and you know, you talked about the age thing, and I mean, we try not to stereotype, you know, anyone. So the day we got married, September 30th, 2000, the year 2000, I took my first pastor job October the 1st. And so we literally were supposed to be grown-ups. I was 21. She was 22. And I've always been a know-it-all, and so is she. Like, we laugh. We can sound like, whether we know it or not, we can absolutely sound like. It's why we both interviewed well, tested well. Even I can come up with stuff on paper that I don't really know, but I can make an educated, you know, guess. And so we had kids who were 18, 19, 17. I mean, they were only 4 years older, and I'm their pastor.
Yeah.
I mean, it was crazy. But we immediately felt so much older because we had to be. And we were taking them across the country on trips and being responsible. Mm-hmm. And I think what set in for me in my 20s was that I really believed that I knew as much as I felt. I really believed that my knowledge level, because I was a fairly bright guy and could process things well. But I kind of bought that. I bought that I knew as much as it seemed that I knew to everybody. And I've heard people say this. I don't want to oversimplify it, because I think if we make it cliche, then no one's going to hear it. Okay. If it's one thing I know, you make it cliche, forget it. No one really cares. And so, when I was in my 20s and I heard people in their 30s and 40s say, well, I'm just now figuring out really what I think life might be about, you're like, oh, yeah. And it just sounds cliche to me, so I don't listen.
Well, plus you've always been advanced. You're like, well, I figured it out in my 20s.
Exactly. It was like, what's wrong with you, moron? And so, like, I really, as I approach 40, and notice I did say as I approach, she's already arrived.
I'm already there.
Guys, I married an older woman. What can I tell you? I mean, I'm a pretty big deal. But anyway, as I approach that, it really has nothing to do with the age. Zero to do. It's just a number. Doesn't matter to me at all. Matters to my hairline, but doesn't matter to me. But I honestly, and some of this is the journey and the story of what we talk about on this podcast so much, there are honestly things that God has been revealing to me that what was so difficult about hearing them is I thought I already knew them.
Yeah.
I think the greatest detriment to what we can hear or what we can learn or what we can understand is the myth in our minds that we already know it. And so we box it away somewhere in a category of already known, and we're literally, it can be punching us in the face, but we can't get it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the Tennessee fans that think that we're still good.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can't convince them we're not some national power. Guys, we did not win a game in the SEC, but for whatever reason, that's in their head. It's this pre-existing idea. And so what she's saying that I love is getting to that pain of, there are things about me, there has to be. So I challenge that thought of what we were both saying, the reason I didn't want to take this. oh, I already know this about me. No, there are absolutely things, there's behaviors I may be aware of, but I don't understand why. There's no way, and even now, that, and this was so great about getting to be this age. Now, I want to discover. I want to discover things theologically. I want to discover things about God. I really am at a place where I believe that there are more things I don't know than I do. And there's a humility that has come. Mm-hmm. It's really, by the way, hard at first because they're like, oh crap. Everybody's always assumed I've known this.
Well, and even as a pastor, you've got to be the Bible answer man. That's your goal. That's that's the rule. It's like, if the pastor seems unsure about this, what are we going to do as normal people?
Absolutely. And that's the, you know, Laura's heard me talk about it at home so much. You know, well, what are people going to think? And I realized that the real essence of a more complete and holistic biblical viewpoint of the gospel is found in being willing to say, you know, it's so funny. John Kerry, he got up on a Sunday and he was speaking and he said something about, he wouldn't mind me saying this, talked about how he struggles with women wearing really tight pants. Mm. Like, he goes,
like Mariah Carey.
Yeah, goes to the gym. He goes to the gym and everybody's, you know, half naked to him. And he's just a dude. And that may not be a struggle for everybody, but he shared that. And I remember, like, it was early on. I came home and I was like, man, you know, I know what John meant. And I appreciate him being real. But almost like, I wish he wouldn't have said that. I don't want people being suspicious of him and this and that. And tell, what did you say?
I think I just said that I appreciated the vulnerability of the moment just to say, hey, so what?
I mean, she absolutely like brought out this side of it that just there's see, I didn't know I had that. Like, what is it about me that thinks that I can't say that I'd be tempted?
You're afraid to show weakness because you've always been the strong one.
Someone's going to think that I could be tempted by attractive women. Hey, guys. I could be tempted by attractive women,
right?
By my wife every day, if you know what I mean. Anyway, but the right she's right here, guys. But you know that what is it about me that makes me better than that? That's the problem that could cause me to fall because it's that blind spot that whether ever it's an action or something, but that blind spot that says no. Those of us who are mature and higher, we don't face what everyone else faces.
What does this have to do with the Enneagram?
The point was it showed me something
Enneagrams
about...
Enneagrams can show you your blind spots.
Yeah, it showed me something about myself.
But in this case, real life showed you your blind spots. You figured out your blind spot in that moment with Laura, not the Enneagram telling you, here's a blind spot.
The same willingness for me, number one, to have an honest conversation with my wife, her to be honest with me enough to say, hey, I think that was a good thing, and we have that conversation that at first I disagreed with her, and by the end of it, I had this aha moment. That willingness is the same willingness that caused me to be brave enough to take the Enneagram and open my mind to what it is. It's not about the test. It's about the willingness to want to learn more about yourself and the assumption that possibly you don't already know everything about yourself.
Well, and I think even if we say, okay, I know that about myself, great. But sometimes what we do is when we say, I know this or I whatever, we relegate then that to I know that already, therefore it is what it is. It isn't changeable. I can't deal with it, or it is what it is and nothing more, when really that's not true.
Yeah, I'm irritated by people like that. They're
well,
like,
I'm not saying well, that's how I'm just I feel loud. About things.
Look, dad's just rude. It's like, well, you need to talk to your dad.
Yeah,
he's rude. He just grew up that way. Well, it's time to grow up for real. Yeah.
It's the idea that we come to a place where we stop, and that's really it for me. It's coming to a place where I'm accepting things about myself as if there's no room for growth for me.
Yeah.
Now, you can go too far. I understand. I spent my life trying to fix every issue that I have. But man, there's such freedom in thinking that maybe that Christ and through Jesus's people around me is actually changing is transforming my life into someone better, that I'm seeing that progressively every day. And if I can't see it, then what the heck am I doing?
Like, yeah, I see a lot of that on the internet, on Facebook. Like, there's a lot of these like advice, you know, motivational posters in weird fonts, and they'll say like something to the extent of like being yourself is the best thing you can be. And I'm like, well, that's great advice, unless you're a complete jerk. That's great advice.
Sure.
Keep doing what you're doing. You know, if you can't handle me on my worst day, I don't want you with me on my best day. I saw that once. I was like, okay, look. Just, it's all about like, what are you, it's not like we're trying to fix ourselves. And again, there's grace and there's transformation, but I'm saying this idea that we are accepting things in ourselves sometimes in a bad way. We're just like, well, that's just who I am. It's like, well, there's room for growth. You're not dead yet. You know,
I want to clarify because this is not my stance, what you guys are
Dane,
arguing.
Dane, this is
right
an
now.
Intervention, bro. No. I think you know.
I want to hear Dane's perspective.
I think that the Enneagram as a tool, as a mechanism, is just essentially another personality test that I can take on Facebook where I am giving input. I'm inputting things about myself that I already know.
Okay.
Based on questions that it's asking me or the book's asking me or whatever the mechanism is. And then it's outputting the same thing, just pieced together differently. It's telling me what I just said back to
myself. You assume because you know the data going in that you already know the conclusions coming out.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not saying that I don't think I should change as a person
because
I don't think the Enneagram is useful.
But like
I'm saying I don't think the Enneagram is that useful and you guys have bought into this thing.
What?
And now you're selling selling the Enneagram. You are. And I want to know, when did you get hired?
I want listen, hold on to these E-meter cans and I want you to tell me who hurt you. This is Scientology.
I think that it's true that you are inputting information into something that is then geared to synthesize that information and give you an output. I think the thing that is unique in this situation to anything at least that I have taken before, which generally like strength finders, Myers-Briggs, leadership assessment, all of those things are really geared towards your task or your behaviors or your aptitudes. You know, you are really this, and this. Therefore, you're good at management, banking.
Right,
you know, it's more about your behaviors and your outward things. This is the first one that I've taken and really spent any time with that's really about my motivations, like the inside versus external things. So it's unique in that sense. And for me, the thing that I love, especially in the way it's being used in the church and in seminary and other things, is that everybody has this kind of question. Mm-hmm. Each type has basically sort of an intrinsic question that motivates them or is a key motivator, and it's what their heart longs to hear. Mm-hmm. And each of us have that, what our heart, like at our very core, what our heart longs to hear, and how then grace and Christ answers that question for each of us. Even if it's only just that information, even if we don't ever use the information for ourselves, I think that's so important as leadership and things in the church to understand that there are different questions that people are asking, and it may not look like my question. Yeah. And how does Christ answer that question for them so that we can relate and educate and teach and do things in a broader spectrum so that we're not just answering from our like from our perspective.
Well, I'm interested in the whole thing of like the panes in the window, the Gandhi window, the Jahupti,
Jahari window.
Whatever it is. I'm Jumanji. I want to get a Jumanji window.
It's really cool. I mean, and that's kind of where
stuff that I know that others don't know versus the stuff that people know. Because like everybody, I think about,
i.e. the term blind spot.
Or like the bad, like it's the bad breath friend or it's the underarm odor friend. Like, he doesn't know, and like unless you're a good enough friend to be like, dude, it's time.
Yeah.
You know,
and to
like,
the Jahari windows bit, I say, nice try. Nice try trying to disprove me. I don't buy it still.
Well, and again,
you don't think you have a window? I can tell you some stuff.
No,
you know,
I'm sure I have a window.
We're going to talk off air. I'm going to throw you through a Jahari window.
That one in particular, I mean, is an accepted like standard in psychology. That one's not like a
thing
that's just become
a thing. Okay, I'll make it real from my own example. Because yes, I'm a guy.
I would like to say this too, because you touched on this a little bit, Laura. I think it's my position, especially in commercial and businesses. I think those tests, like the Enneagram, like the any personality test that you would take, where you're red, yellow, identify as green or blue, whatever.
Right.
I think that's way more helpful for the people that you work with, or way more helpful for the people that are around you constantly, because I think that it allows them to see how they can work you. How they can manipulate
it's very conspiracy
you,
theory.
How to control you. I think it works for them way more than it works for you.
That's a little scary, Dane.
Why? It almost, is. That's why, like, I won't do it.
You're almost like a guy who's afraid to be discovered. Because someone might take advantage of you.
Well, I mean, I feel like those people.
I think this is your Enneagram.
But if it works, if it works,
they know
to
enough
make
about
you...
me by being around me. They don't need to know, like, my psychology. They don't need to know that I'm motivated by X.
But you know, like, what I do if I'm about to put you in charge of a $10 million project? Yeah, I need to know what motivates you.
And she is, by
I
the way.
And you're going to need to cut your hair.
I need to know
$10 million,
how bro. You're going to handle those situations. And I agree that, yes, kind of
that
knowing.
That plays into what I just said.
Knowing
though.
People does allow you to sort of know what you can trust them with, not trust them with, how they may react in this situation, et cetera. So I guess if you want to take it, like, in its most negative, you can call that manipulation.
I'm fine but with being the most negative.
Think,
I'm not afraid
of that.
I think
knowing it about myself at least allows me to maybe not. Because, like, so for me, I'm a type 2. So when I'm at my worst, I am very manipulative of other people.
Which is why you're not getting my Enneagram scores.
I don't want to be that way. So knowing, like, that about myself will help me avoid that in the future.
Well, like, I know about myself that I'm negative and I'm cynical and I'm overanalytical. That's part of what makes me write jokes. But it's also something that I want to fight against spiritually, because I'm like, I don't know anybody happy that's cynical and judgmental and overanalytical. Yeah. So when I look at that data together, I go, okay, I can just accept this and go, well, I'll put out two great comedy records, though. Or I can go, how can I do both? How can I have a happy marriage and friends who don't feel judged and overanalyzed and like they're going to – and be creative.
Right.
So that knowing that about myself is not just enough to go, well, this is who I am. Wah, wah. Like, no, it's not enough.
Well, and I think for me, the wall that – I'm trying to break through in myself and in relationships, and really the real message that we're trying to figure out if we're willing to embrace about being the church and being in this family of Christ together is, it's not that we can or cannot discover these things about one another. It's seeing the need to love you well enough to care. So that, and seeing all of us, whether we're willing to let others really see that and to not be so suspicious of it that someone must have an ulterior motive. I think it's, and I'm not using the N word or generational things at all with you. Okay. But I think all of us in our 20s, especially, there is a sense of suspicion. What does everyone want to get out of me? You're a musician who, since you were, and so was I, since the age of 12, people need us for something on the stage. Mm-hmm. People need, you know, we have this great, we always have something to offer, okay? And there's always an angle. And then I'm very suspicious of church by my natural inclination. And so is, you know, I think we all have these things we've seen. And this real, like, change in perspective about what grace is, about what the message is of the gospel, has caused me to go, I mean, I am like, I'm really closed off. I mean, I'm the guy that proclaims this from the stage every week, and I really don't want anyone to know who I really am except a few people. And because of that, if you think I'm not giving that away, so as the answer guy, go back to that. Yeah. If I'm always the answer guy, who could ever teach me? The answer was no one. No one.
Right.
Johnny and Laura, I would allow to say things into my life, and that's really about it. But anybody else, if I let them speak, I always use my friend Jason as an example. Jason's a drug addict, was a drug addict, you know? And I just looked at him like he was an idiot. And so the body of Christ didn't grow in either one of our lives because he never, when he would try to speak something spiritual into me, I would just kind of patronize him.
Yeah.
Because I didn't see that about myself. I didn't see that Jesus might be wanting to do something in me through the wisdom that he's speaking. I would just shrug him off. Oh, that's great. Remember there was a guy, Brian, who goes to church here. I remember when we first started a lot of this, we had these nights. And I remember we were sitting there. And Brian, at the very end, I knew the people needed to go pick up their kids downstairs. Mm-hmm. And he made some spiritual, wouldn't you say that grace is, he said something, and I had been waxing eloquent up on the stage for so long answering
kinda
questions.
Like right now.
Yeah. And thank you. And I appreciate it. See, there's that kind of painful honesty that I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And so he said something, and I shut him down in a spiritual way. I was like, well, I don't know. And I quoted like 3-4 scriptures, and I shut him down. And then I realized later, like, I'm perpetuating the problem. Mm-hmm. And so the next Sunday when I was speaking, I actually apologized to him in the message. That's what people need to see from me. Like, because it would needed to be said. Hey, dude, I was rude to you the other night, but I did it in a spiritual Jesus way and totally shut you down. And by the way, what you said was good, and I should have listened to it.
Yeah.
And his eyes are about as big. And he came, well, you didn't have to say that. Well, yeah. Like, so it's seeing the need to want other people to know what's really going on inside of me, realizing that you don't have to. Look, I don't need just qualified experts and professionals. I need all you guys. And until we all do that, I mean, this is just new for me. I was the expert. I wanted to be that guy. Now, you know what, Dane? I really believe, however old you are, I really believe my 9-year-old. I really believe my 65-year-old friends in church, like, that the body of Christ is beautiful because Jesus is the only expert. Mm-hmm. And I need to be real, and I need to not assume I'm taking his role. Like, I have a role here, and that I'm enriched by all of these, all of the above. And here's the problem. When I can't be open to being who I really am, or we're not all being open together, then we just get shallow church. We just get shallow Jesus experiences, and we get exactly what we're all getting. And people walk away going, well, that's not, what's so life-changing about this? I have friendships outside of church that have that. And Jesus is going, yeah, guys, friendships outside of church is better than the ones inside the church. And that's not how I made this. And it's not because the message isn't right. Mm-hmm. It's because we all got these blind spots, these window panes that we don't even acknowledge exist. And so I think for me, that's what it is. Doesn't mean it's what it is for everybody.
Right.
But forget the Enneagram. It's that nature inside of me to change, to go, no, I want to be known. I want someone to see this. I'm asking you guys to do that. I'm asking you not just to point out my faults, but to help me as like we read from John Calvin last week. Hey, knowing these things about myself are important to me understanding who God is, because if I'm not going to allow God to speak into my life, even if I can't listen to it, then there's no way I can grow from it. So
I think that health, if you think about just physical health, it's a continuum, right? There's on one end, there's like being in the ICU on a ventilator, like very near death. And on the other end of the spectrum, maybe it's like being an Ironman triathlete, right?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of health in between those two polar opposites. There's a lot of places along that continuum that would be considered healthy. For me, the Enneagram or any of these type things towards growth is just trying to shift the marker towards health a little bit more, towards that Ironman triathlete of my own self-awareness and those things, because the healthier that I get in those things, then the healthier that my marriage becomes, the healthier that my friendships become, the healthier I become in the body of Christ. And if we're all moving towards health, then the church becomes a much healthier place to be, and we can start being sort of that body that we're supposed to be. But until we're willing to kind of take those steps towards emotional, mental, you know, spiritual health in those things, and this is just one tool for me to get there among many others, then all I'm doing is just shifting that bar closer towards health.
Well, that's good. That's you're quoting Ephesians 4 in a lot of ways. It talks about every part of the body growing, becoming healthy, doing its share so that the body itself as a whole grows. Sorry, Dane, you were saying something.
Yeah, I just, again, I'm going to ask, when did y'all start working for the Enneagram?
Guys, Enneagram,
because so far,
is that a person? Well, is the Enneagram,
well, whatever,
a person?
Organization made the Enneagram.
They just made it into like the Illuminati.
Because y'all have tried to sell me on the Enneagram is intricate to my relationship with my family. The Enneagram is intricate to the relationship with my church. And the Enneagram is intricate to my relationship with Jesus.
Not the Enneagram, own self-awareness.
I'm making a point, but I'm also just being facetious.
I know, but other people's awareness of you and your awareness of
really
yourself.
Use a rock if it helps. It doesn't matter. Find some
My argument is that this helps way more than an Enneagram would.
Well, that's all it is.
Real life helps way more than an enneagram.
But you know what? You, if you
the
read
church needs a enneagram. That's
a
what we need.
Enneagram, that's hilarious. Oh
God. Do you know about the secret sins?
But if you knew more about my motivations and my types, then you might understand me better, which would allow us to have a healthier relationship. So forget it being about you for a second and think about it being about other people.
And now I'm selfish because I don't want to take the Enneagram.
No, but the Enneagram also sucks.
Like, I've had conversations with your wife about this and knowing her type and things. Oh, like that about you makes so much more sense in the context of those things. Knowing his type
allows you to put him in a tinier box.
No, it doesn't. Right? It doesn't. But you know what it does? It helps me understand his core motivations in a way that when he does need to process and say, okay, you know what? I just need an hour of your time. Like, for me to understand, that's, I mean, it's not just that he needs to wax eloquent for an hour. Yeah. It's that he really needs that to process the information and to get through it. It gives me a whole other level of willingness to give that time.
Yeah.
Instead of just being frustrated by it, she understands the reason behind it.
Yeah.
And hopefully understand about her. And I'll have to tell y'all on another episode about what this did for me in terms of my need for resolution in relationships, because the greatest felt need of the six, the thing that my heart longs to hear is that you are safe, which I didn't want to hear that. I thought that was stupid because I'm a very courageous guy who takes chances, but that's not what it meant. Mm-hmm. I really praying one day. So the answer, I knew that about myself, but it made sense. Oh, no, it's not just my incessant need for everybody in my life to all be okay with each other and with me is my version of things being safe. Everything is okay. I needed to all be okay for all of us, all of us at the same time. And y'all know that. If I think it's not, you'll be getting a lot of texts and phone calls from me.
Yeah, I have that.
Until
I
it is.
For sure.
Yeah. And so that helped me. So I did. I discovered something about why I'm that way instead of just being ashamed of that, because I don't like that. I feel that was a weakness. And maybe it is. But I can be healthier in it. Okay. Yeah, now I know why. So anyway, we've gone over our time,
Today. I would like to say I've taken the Enneagram before. Zach has a book.
Oh, that's right. Like, Zach's big really book into of it, Enneagram. Yeah.
So he did it on me one night, and I'm pretty sure I broke it. Like, it didn't quite get
me. You didn't
me.
Line up with one?
Uh-uh.
And that happens. Enneagram. I mean, and they do talk about that and having to take sort of multiple versions of it to kind of hone in truly on where you are. And with the Enneagram, you know, you're in a triad, plus you have a wing and variants and all those things. So it can get really complicated.
Yeah. I'm going to say that to say I tried it, and it was not useful for me.
Well, but maybe we revisit it together.
You know, like the only other person I ever heard that got like a split level decision like that was Charles Manson. So, hey,
well, there you go. That.
Me and old Charlie.
You and
Dane, one time long ago, you tried scissors too. Doesn't mean you should give up on them now.
There's the object lesson. John's holding scissors right now. So we're going to go down to the pond and throw them in the water.
We're going to throw Dane's
It'll
hair.
Represent, yeah, in, beautiful.
Dane's hair will float to the top.
Well, hey, honey, thank you for being on the episode today.
It's wonderful.
I had fun.
She's so smart. No. I love to have you. We're going to have you back a lot. It's going to be exciting. So, and I hope that Sadie hasn't killed our dog upstairs. But thank you guys too. Don't forget to share on whatever platform you're listening on.
Please do.
And
comment, review, all that stuff.
Yeah. Coming into the holidays, lots of people are going to want to catch up on everything. So spread it around and tell them just like holiday cheer.
And flu.
And hit that subscribe button for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And but we'll see you next time on Talk About That. It's going to be amazing.
Yep. You hit subscribe. And we'll send you your very own copy of the Enneagram to take for yourself.
Oh, yeah. That's a good idea.
Free on the website.
All right. Y'all have a good one.
Hey, friend, I'm Brooke McLaughlin, host of the Everyday Prayers podcast, a ministry of Million Praying Moms, and I'm here to invite you to partner with God for the hearts of your children on the daily. Our goal at Everyday Prayers is to help moms understand and pray God's Word. Join us each weekday as we share insights from God's Word for today's Christian mom. Tune in to the Everyday Prayers podcast in your favorite app or by visiting lifeaudio.com.